Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Boulder Endless Energy Detox 14-day program. I'm Melissa Bloom, otherwise known as Coach Melissa, and I'm a registered dietitian who works with thousands of clients on a feels like 24/7 basis. I am so excited to be here with you again today, and thank you so much for joining us for our week two class. I'm especially excited to talk about a subject that I'm very passionate for, other than the whole Detox the Right Way program. During our class one, we're really going to be focusing on our bowel systems and talking about poop. We all do it. And discussing how we can really improve that system and how it's connected so much to our brain and our mental health. But first, I'd like to recap on what we talked about during class one and week one. I hope you're doing totally okay with the shakes every day to replace two meals in a day, and that you're feeling really great about it physically and mentally. I had discussed with you that at first you may feel a little bit meh, I don't know if I like this so much. But after about 4 or 5 days, you really get into a routine and enjoy the feeling that you get from having a balanced, adequate form of nutrition that is nourishing to your body and aids in the detoxification processes of your liver. So to add to that, we discussed the two different types of phases in the detox process and how the glutathione production is vital to those phases and what foods may increase glutathione. So we talked about very micronutrient dense foods like fruits and vegetables, spinach, scallions, cauliflower, kale, asparagus, the hip broccolini. All of those serve an excellent purpose to help our bodies detoxify. I forget to mention fruits a lot of the times. We tend to hone in on vegetables, but fruits with skins and that are vibrant in color, like apples and oranges, bananas, kiwis, blueberries, strawberries, boysenberries. I don't know if you've ever had one of those, but they're delicious. It's not made up, I promise you. And all of those lovely, delicious, fantastic foods that can help our bodies optimally function. We also talked about how sleep, hydration, stress management are all important factors in addition to nutrition to help our bodies detox the right way. I wanted to remind you that this is not a low-calorie program. This is not a juice fast. This is not a colon cleanse. This is not an enema program. Those things do anything but detox your body. It makes sense, right? So when you're thinking about detoxing and cleansing your body, you want to get rid of something. You want to get rid of the toxins, which a lot of programs don't even identify those toxins. And we talked about that in our class one. So if you don't remember, revert back to those that discussion and really go into, okay, so what are some of those environmental toxins that our bodies are really trying to detoxify, and what are those endogenously made toxins that our bodies have metabolic byproducts of and produce? How do we get rid of those things? And what exactly are they? So a lot of those popular detox programs will do anything but identify the toxin because they have really no clue and no scientific backing. So it frustrates me as a dietitian, and I can imagine it frustrates you guys in really understanding and learning what the heck am I supposed to do with nutrition. Hopefully I've clarified some of that for you on a sound, professional, scientifically backed program. So another thing that I wanted to mention as well is the importance of the two shakes a day. And I've probably mentioned this a total of 5 times because I truly believe in it on a short-term basis and clearing out some of that decision fatigue that we often experience with trying to change our diet. And I think that's why diets in general seem so appealing, whether they're scientifically backed or not. We are told exactly what to do. And nutrition can be so subjective, right? But we don't want it to be. We want it to be objective. We want to have a caloric number we try to reach. We want to have a macronutrient count. We want to have a sometimes a micronutrient count. It's virtually impossible without professional software. FYI. But we want to count something. We want to have an objective piece of information. Well, that is very nice and quite helpful in the short term, like with incorporating 2 shakes a day, with having some leeway in your decision-making process of desiring a specific taste and adding different kinds of fruits and such to it, and different dairy alternatives to those. But over long term, it just is not something that's sustainable. So I want you to stick around for our final session next week that really goes into the sustainability of this program and what to do moving forward that is so important. Research really backs the case of 2 shakes a day in regards to weight loss and successful weight loss. In different types of studies shown, variable studies and various studies with different population types, different population numbers, really show the case for shakes. And 2 shakes a day really proved to be benefit for substantial weight loss compared to 1 shake a day. And even having the same amount nutritionally, like equivalent to 2 shakes a day, that actually was shown not to be as effective in weight loss as the 2 shakes a day. So I want to just remind you of the importance of that. I am not someone who condones fad dieting by any means, but I have also known that with my experience, that a sense of structure is so important to carrying out sustainable change. That's like me coming to a client and saying, with the client asking me, so what do I do with food? What am I supposed to eat? And me saying, well, you have an intuitive sense of knowing that. Yes, you do, but not at that moment. And that's where we're at, of really trying to gain that sense of intuitiveness back over years. If you've chronically dieted, or if you dieted in the past and can't seem to get a grip on maintaining a healthy body weight and having a healthy relationship with food. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit on my rant of where my heart lies and a lot of my expertise falls into. And another thing that I wanted to mention too, this is not medical advice. I am not a physician, although I did think about going to med school. I didn't. I decided to be a dietitian instead, a nutritionist. And I do not want this information to override anything that your physician has told you or recommended you to do. If you have a question, feel free to ask me, but I will direct you in that appropriate way if it's something out of my scope of practice. I am not afraid to do that. I don't know everything, but I do know a lot. So today we're really going to hone in on your gut health. That means all of that 16 feet of intestinal tract that you obtain during infancy and that you maintain now, unless you have had part of that excised or removed. I am talking to you. You have 16 feet of that intestinal tract wrapped up inside of your body. And with that comes a lot of area to have some poor bacteria. And I'm really going to make the case for building positive bacteria in your gut. And I know you all have heard that. This is not something new. This is something that has become more popular in recent years as research has shown the benefits of having a healthy gut microbiota. For those of you that don't know what microbiota refers to, it's really the population of gut bacteria in your intestinal tract, your small intestines and your large intestines. So when your stomach empties food out into your intestines to the time that you poop, that is what I'm talking about. Also, another component that I wanted to talk about today in regards to gut health is your brain-gut axis and how your mental health really affects your ability to digest foods. And your ability to digest foods directly relates to your ability to detoxify. You see my link here. So this is why this is incredibly important. Just one reason why. There are multiple functions of your bowel, but detoxing is one of those. Now, let me clarify. Your liver really carries that out in your intestinal tract, continues that job with getting rid of toxic waste or extra waste that your body doesn't need. So if any of you are constipated, which our nation is chronically constipated because we have a low fiber diet, which a lot of people attribute to diverticulosis. Some of you may be familiar with that condition. They don't know exactly what causes it, but they theorize that. So as I had mentioned in detoxifying with your liver, fiber. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of fiber. Now, I do want to caution you in this regard. Fiber is very important, but there is a common trend that we have added fibers into like granola bars or protein bars. And while all that is great and it's a wonderful idea because protein usually dehydrates you, it takes a lot of the water in your cells out for its digestive purposes, a lot of it's too much at once. So you'll find particular bars with 17 grams of fiber in it. Whoa, that's a lot for one 200 calorie bar. That's going to give you some stomach upset, especially with sugar alcohols in it too. And we'll talk about that later. But fiber is so important to move foods through your bowel system and to help carry out that detoxification process. There's two different types of fiber, and I'm kind of angry that they're not located on the nutritional facts label. That nutritional facts label is changing. I have a lovely handout for you to regard that too. It's a little bit indirectly related to what we're talking about, but just for your information, because the more information I can share, the better, in my opinion. And so the two different types of fiber, they're not listed on the back of the food label. Certain brands that you find in your grocery store, you'll see that. So you'll see dietary fiber, and then below that indented, you'll see insoluble and soluble. Both are very important in kind of balanced quantities, but I want to tell you the purpose of each of those. So soluble fiber is soluble in intestinal juices, for lack of a better term. And insoluble fiber is not soluble in intestinal juices. So soluble bulks your bowels up. So it bulks your poop up. Insoluble helps your poop move through. That's why it's so important that we get a balance of both, which when you consume fruits and vegetables and foods high in fiber, like oatmeal, chia seed, flaxseed, avocado, fruits of skin, vegetables, all of those lovely colorful anthocyanins, flavonoids, you get a balance of both of those naturally. But I've had people come to me before, Melissa, I've had really soft poop or I can't poop and everything seems to be appropriate dietary wise. And I analyzed that pretty thoroughly, by the way. And they may be having one type of vegetable and they may not have a variety of it. And that's where I say, huh, are we not getting enough soluble fiber? Are we not getting enough insoluble fiber? So consider that. There's lots of literature on that. And I will be providing you what you should have access to already. A list of the differences of fiber and the food sources of each. So keep that in the back of your mind. Fiber, fiber, fiber. We need about 25 to 35 grams a day. No, not all at once. Throughout the day. One thing I love about the Boulder Endless Energy Protein powders is that they have like 5 to 6 grams of fiber in a serving. And that is wonderfully important. So all in all, fiber helps push our bowels through and it helps us excrete those toxic substances and carry out what the liver set out to do, as well as get rid of excess nutrition as well. So a little bit more about the function of our bowel system or our intestines. So the small intestines is where a lot of our nutrient absorption occurs. The large intestine, some of it does, like in the colon, water, vitamin K, and just a handful of micronutrients are absorbed there, but most is the small intestines. So back to that microbiota, the gut bacteria. Sounds great, doesn't it? So I want you to think about the intestinal walls in your small intestine and as well in your large intestines. There are finger-like projections called microvilli or microvilli. I've heard it expressed in those two pronunciations. But the microvilli, it's really a harbor for our bacteria. So if you think about it, finger-like projections, you move your fingers, kind of like those, what is this called from the Bring It On movie? A lot of you may be able to remember that movie. I sure do. The spirit fingers or something like that, wiggling. That's what your microvilli do and to help push food through. But your gut bacteria surround that. So if you imagine little specks of bacteria on those finger-like projections that help carry out the function of your intestines and what your liver set out to do and detoxify. So if you have less positive bacteria and more negative bacteria, those microvilli aren't really going to be able to push food through as efficiently and as effectively. So what, may you ask, helps build that positive gut microbiota? There's a lot of things that affect your gut microbiota, and a lot of things are still in research. This is a very, newer studied topic, meaning adequate, substantial research being done on it. But there's a lot of talk on it too. So remember that anytime there's a scientific surge, there's always going to be those advertising companies who are trying to market off of you and saying that they know all the answers and the cure to this. They really don't. So I'm going to explain the science behind it. So when we think about our microbiota, we want to consider foods that help that. And there's a common theme here is fruits and vegetables that are colorful, that are robust, that have fiber in them already. And you guessed it, that's what helps build your microbiota. When we have things like probiotics, so there's a lot of buzz about this too, and probiotics are very important. In fact, there's probiotics and prebiotics, and the prebiotics, think of those as a precursor to probiotics. And if you're asking me if you should take a probiotic, my answer is maybe. And I know, again, that's very subjective. So recent research has shown that your gut microbiota is as unique as your own thumbprint. Think about that for a second. So your thumbprint is yours and yours only. No one else can recreate that. No one else has your thumbprint. Well, think about this. No one else has your gut microbiota. So why would the same probiotic help you that helped your next door neighbor? It may not. So I want you to consider that. And, you know, sad to say, there's not a whole lot of testing and things that could be done yet. Yet, I say that with an asterisk, that can test the type of microbiota you have. So in terms of if a probiotic or a prebiotic could help you, I tell my clients, try for a couple of weeks, make sure it doesn't need to be refrigerated. It may very well need to be refrigerated. And see how it makes you feel. If it helps your bowel system and if it helps you feel better, then keep using it. And if at any time it doesn't, then don't. And if it really doesn't help you from the get-go, then don't eat it. Don't have it. Things that naturally have probiotics and prebiotics in them are obviously yogurts and cultured yogurts. They naturally have cultures in them. Sauerkraut, any kind of fermented food, kombucha. That's another topic in and of itself, kombucha. So any of those, like sauerkraut, I think I had mentioned that before. Sorry if I said that again. But any of those fermented foods do naturally contain probiotics. So we have our gut microbiota and the physical nature of what that does on a physiological level and how that moves food through, the benefits of fiber, fruits and vegetables, and a well-balanced diet in that. All micros and macros serve a purpose in creating a healthy gut microbiota, and probiotics could be helpful. As well as hydration. Yay, lovely hydration. So remember in the getting started session, I was saying to you, oh, this is kind of annoying. We've all heard that we need to drink more water, but it really definitely is important. So don't undermine yourself with that. Get yourself a big 32-ounce water bottle. I find my clients do best when they have 32 ounces of water at once. You consume 2 to 3 of those in a day. Bada bing, bada boom, you have it done. There's also fluid that you consume in fruits and vegetables. So the case for fruits and vegetables, there is another reason why to consume those. I was not so great with water when I was younger. I loved sugary beverages. Of course, you know, as a young kiddo, really not, maybe into my 20s. And I wasn't great at consuming water. And then, you know, I got better as I learned more about nutrition and studied through that. And then I moved to Arizona, where it is 10% humidity. And if you don't drink, you die. So those of you from Arizona, I totally get what I'm saying, or Las Vegas, any kind of desert terrain. All power to you, desert unite. Otherwise, you have lots of humidity and there's good and bad with that. I've lived in Texas before, so I completely understand. All right, so we have the physical sense of our small intestine and a little bit of the anatomy and physiology marked down. Now I want to talk to you about the importance of hormonal balance and stress management and the maintenance of our healthy gut microbiota. So this is called the brain-gut axis. And again, if you type that in Google, there's going to be a lot of people's opinions on it, but there's also going to be some scientific research on the importance of that. And multiple studies by the NIH early in the 2010s, maybe 2013 through 2014, show a direct correlation with anxiety and stress and a negative effect on your gut microbiota and your ability to digest foods. And this is a concept that I feel incredibly passionate about and just an advocate for mental health. And this is not going to be a session on how to improve your mental health. I am not a therapist. If you do need help, I encourage you to seek out professional help. But this is something that really makes a connection between the two and why I stress journaling, why I stress goal making, why I stress give some time for yourself, why I stress get adequate sleep, because those are all mental stressors that in turn create physical stressors for our body. I'm convinced that the majority of our diseases are caused, if not exacerbated, by our chronic stress levels. Jackie, I know, talks a lot about our level of cortisol, which that is theorized to be really chronically elevated in a lot of people because of our higher level of stress and our demands of society. And so things that would normally happen in your fight or flight response, which is promotes the release of cortisol, happen on a very subtle, continual basis. It's not good. It suppresses your immune system. It suppresses your digestive system. It causes hormonal imbalances. It can reduce your production of insulin and cause type 2 diabetes. So it all sounds very familiar. That's just another tidbit. Remember, our bodies are so complicated, and this is just a 20 to 30 minute talk on how these factors come together. So I hope you have a better understanding of this when you get done with this session. So the brain-gut axis is really headed by our vagus nerve and about 20 different types of hormones and neurotransmitters that are directly developed in our gut. Did you know that about 80% of your serotonin is made in your gut? What? I had no idea that that was the case. And for those of you that don't know, serotonin is really a relaxation hormone. And this really creates problems when our serotonin is low for multiple reasons. And we're trying to find other ways to relax. And maybe we're trying other ways to get sleep. And this could lead to a lack of chronic sleep issues. So there's other neurotransmitters out there that are transmitted and signaled directly from our brain to our gut and our gut to our brain. Remember, most of these are made in our gut. So the importance of carrying out those functions, as you can see in mental health, it makes sense. So there's 20 different neurotransmitters. They include cholecystokinin. They include dopamine, another one that is often related to high sugar intake. And I'll explain that in a little bit of a tidbit at the end of our session today. But if these hormones aren't firing appropriately, and these hormones have a block in their communication for different reasons, primarily poor gut microbiota, then what do you think that we're going to do to increase those hormones that are usually found through food? Some of them found through food and that make us feel really good. Usually we're going to revert to sugar or other things that increase our serotonin and dopamine. And that's where the case for mental health too. I seem to be on a kick of the case for. Again, I'm so passionate about this topic. And so then our mental health really suffers, and that stems from our gut. What? Again, I can't believe that. It doesn't make sense, but it does all at the same time. Our gut is so intertwined with our brain health that the health of our gut affects our brain health, and our brain health affects the health of our gut. So again, the importance of adequate sleep, the importance of stress management, the importance of hydration, the importance of nutrition, all of that plays a role in the health of our gut. So spending a few minutes to meditate, to journal, to go to a yoga class, to stretch, to get some light movement and observe nature, that is providing you so much more benefit than you think it is. And I just want you to remember that. Even if you have a bad day with food, maybe let's say you overate, whether emotionally or just the food tasted delicious, maybe there was some salsa and chips and guacamole and queso in front of you that you couldn't stop eating because it was delicious. Again, I'm from Texas. Come on, I understand that. Queso is like a second favorite Q word, which I wanted to make that into like an F word, but it just didn't work. I don't know what my first favorite Q word is. Maybe that is it. So, you know, when we have bad days like that, then we have to remind ourselves, well, what can I do in this moment to make this day better? And that could look like simple stress management techniques. I know they're not so simple, but really implementing those things instead of, well, I got to make up for this food that I consumed yesterday. That is a wrong mentality to be in. Instead, if you have a bad day with food, say, how can I change my mindset about this? How can I write down what happened throughout my day? How can I make those connections? Did I emotionally eat? Did I not? What went on? And that, folks, in and of itself will create so much of a benefit for every system in your body, not just the function of your liver. So again, these are all directly related. People just don't consider mental health in all of this, but our gut and our ability to excrete waste and to move waste and continue the function of the liver and detoxifying our bodies plays a major role in our mental health and vice versa. So that's what I wanted you to take home today, is understanding that, wow, there is such an importance with my mental health in regards to my gut health. I did want to share a study that I reviewed a little bit of time ago, and it found that those with anxiety and it's really poorly managed, that their ability to digest foods was just correlated with their anxiety. It had nothing to do with what type of food they ate. It had nothing to do with when they ate or how much they ate. It just had to do with their anxiety. So again, like, we all know, oh, when I'm anxious or when I'm nervous about something, you may have diarrhea, but we don't ever connect that on the lower level of just straight up anxiety, and anxiety in turn is stress. That can alter your ability to digest the foods the way that your body needs to. Wow. So that is the power of mental health. So again, want to hone on the importance of the stress management techniques. And I have a list of ideas for you from my nutrition perspective and working with clients that you may be helpful to you. If there's more to the story and you want to review this with a therapist, I highly encourage you to do that. So another little tidbit I wanted to go over is sugar. So sugar is AKA a fancy name for, I'm sorry, a simple name for carbohydrates and a simple name for glucose. So carbohydrates are sugar, and I can't stand it when people clump carbs as sugar. And they say, well, I'm cutting out all sugar. To me, that means, oh, I'm cutting out all carbs, which I highly don't recommend, by the way. And when people say that, it causes massive confusion and demonizes carbohydrates, which they're not all to be demonized. But when we have sugar, I think of highly refined sugars, added table sugars, like what you would find in a Coca-Cola or a different kind of regular soda, is 11 teaspoons of added sugar in that can of soda. That's what I mean when I talk about sugar. So just to clarify that, sugar really increases your dopamine levels. And it's really a reward system. There is a huge debate in the professional community on, is sugar an addiction? And it is not as powerful as like a cocaine addiction, where there's been some research and headlines that have stated that. I think that's really just a eye catcher for the general public. But it signals the same part of your brain and that reward system, that dopamine system. So it's really hard to stop. And I hear countless times, as well as hearing or experiencing this myself, is that when I have dessert one day or 2 days, in a row, then I want dessert the third day. I want dessert the fourth day. I want dessert the fifth day. And it's this like cascade and domino effect of like, I feel like I can't be satisfied without dessert. And I think the most common situation for me is on cruises. I love cruises, but oh my gosh, like talk about the decadent midnight chocolate bar. Yeah. yes, I don't even have to say anything more about that. But I hear that often from clients, and I think that that's where the feeling of I'm addicted to sugar comes into play. There is some form of that addiction. There is some need to keep you coming back and to keep you wanting sugar. So I usually advise my clients to think about significantly reducing added sugars for a period of time. And you should be doing that during this program. And I'm talking, remember, added sugars. So not those sugars found in fruits, not those sugars found in dairy alternatives or vegetarian sources of protein or complex carbs or starchy vegetables, just added sugars. So things like honey, things like agave, all of those fancy names, those are still sugar. They're like added sugars, even though they're quote unquote naturally found. Well, sugar is still quote unquote sugars found naturally in sugar. And so any kind of those types of sweeteners, I would advise at least for this 14 days not to use. I would also advise you not to have dessert during these 14 days, because I feel like that just really stops the pattern and it stops the trend to get you on that reset to help detoxify the body. Because when you're having refined sugars and sugars that are not super nutritionally beneficial, then you're most likely missing out in nutrients that your body could use to help detoxify the liver. This brings me back to a point that I almost forgot to talk about today, sugar alcohols. I get tons of questions on sugar alcohols. And sugar alcohols are totally fine in small amounts, just like most things, right? But when you have 20 grams of sugar alcohol in a pint of high protein ice cream, that has been shown in research as well by the NIH to cause anal leakage and dietary distress. We don't know a whole lot about them and their function, but we do know that they cause GI distress. So what does that go against that we were talking about, that bowel health? So I wouldn't recommend artificial sweeteners either. I just don't. I would rather you have something that is, again, a fruit, a complex carb, a starchy vegetable, a dairy alternative, rather than something that includes fake sugars or artificial sweeteners or added sugars for the time being. And we'll talk about more on how to navigate that in the long run too. So just to recap, the importance of the physical nature of moving waste through your bowel system, how high fiber foods can affect that, how pre and probiotics could provide some type of benefit, how fruits and vegetables that are very colorful and contain high antioxidant values can assist in those processes. And then we chatted about the brain-gut axis, so the mental health component of the function of your bowel system and that neurological communication with a physical aspect of your body. And so the importance of stress management and just your body's ability to detox in the first place and to carry out all of its other wonderful, amazing functions optimally. So we are wrapping up today, and I hope you're feeling really great. Hang in there. You got this. Please feel free, if you have any questions, to send me an email, and I will see you next week for our final continuing this program throughout your life in the sustainability session, and to guide you on how to continue these lovely health benefits that you're getting from doing this program into the majority of your life. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great night.